Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Just as we thought, just as we predicted, things went exactly as we had planned, except that they didn't, Wes. We sat here a few days ago, sounding foolish now in retrospect, as we condemned the Syracuse basketball team to another loss on Tuesday against North Carolina at home. But Syracuse basketball team had other plans. Thanks for listening to the Juice on the Cuse podcast. Matt D'Agostino alongside Wes Chang. And Syracuse gets a marquee victory at home, 86-79 over North Carolina. I'd like to say we thought this was coming, Wes, but clearly, this is a surprise victory and a staple victory for this season for Syracuse.
You know what Herm Edwards said? He said, "Why do we play? You play to win the game." And that's exactly what Syracuse did despite the odds. And obviously a great win, Matt. Now, is it going to save Syracuse's season and send them to the NCAA tournament? Of course not. But I think this team just needed for their psyche to know that they could topple a team like that if they really play well. And it started with the offense, 62.5% shooting from the field, 8 for 25 from the line, many of them to hold the lead in the final minutes. And on defense, we saw the zone for extended stretches of time. I think that took the ball out of Armando Bacot's hands. So that was a good tactical decision from Red Autry, despite the fact that it didn't necessarily slow down UNC scoring. But speaking of Autry, it was obviously, as you said, the first signature win of the Autry era. So good feelings all around. They played well and deserved to win that game. One thing that I wanted to point out, Matt, and was a little frustrating, I know you probably thought the same thing, is that it took, like, I don't know, 20 minutes to play the last 5 minutes of the game with all the stoppages. I know the officials want to get it right, but it just seems like every out-of-bounds call has resulted in an officials review. And by the time they stopped the clock again to review Bacot's flagrant on Mintz, it was just too much. So I'm not sure how you fix that, but you have to streamline that process. But, you know, again, great win for Syracuse.
I'm going to let our listeners behind the curtain here for a moment. So you know this, the listeners probably don't. I work nights for TNT, so both Tuesday and Wednesday, I'm working late at night. So I watched the first half of Syracuse, North Carolina on Wednesday morning. And I watched the second half Wednesday night after I got home from work. So I'm sitting in my bed watching my DVR from about midnight to one. And obviously I know the result of the game. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is taking forever at the end of this game. I mean, I'm trying to go to bed, Wes. It's 1 a.m. on the East Coast and I'm trying to get to bed. And everything is just like taking forever and ever to figure out these last however many seconds it was in the ball game. So yeah, I was getting a little impatient knowing what was going on. I'm sure in the moment watching it live, a little more suspenseful, but I'm sitting in my bed ready to count my Z's. And I'm just like, let's get this going here. But we talked about multiple times over the last few games, how Syracuse was allowing its opponents to shoot so well. Three of the last four opponents have shot at least 60% from the floor coming into the North Carolina game. So it was nice to see things kind of balance out a little bit and Syracuse get some good fortune. But they certainly took advantages when they could get them. And, the rebounding wasn't in Syracuse's favor, but wasn't as lopsided as it's been in recent games. They just came ready to play. And that's what it sounded like afterwards was, you know, we knew we got embarrassed the first time we played these guys and we wanted to go out and show what the real Syracuse basketball team looks like. And for the first time, I really thought they had a little stick-to-itiveness, a little fortitude in the end when things could have gone either way. They made an effort and the results showed it to really go out there and stamp their name on the game.
Yeah, Matt, talking about stick-to-itiveness, I think the moment we can all point to as the major turning point for that game is 7:18 left in the game, RJ Davis hits that layup off a nice find from Baycott. North Carolina has its first lead at 65-64. And I think if you're a Syracuse fan, you're thinking, all right, well, you know, it was a nice run against the number 7 team in the country, but this is where the wheels fall off the wagon, you know, based on what's happened most of the season against top teams and most recently against Clemson. But then, you know, on that ensuing possession, they call a timeout. It wasn't a great offensive set, but J.J. Starling pulls up from, I think, 25 to 27 feet, banks in that three-pointer. I don't know if he called glass, but Syracuse is back up too. And you could just feel the momentum shift backing in. I think to me, that was where the moment where I thought there was a genuine belief that Syracuse could pull this off. And again, it was that stick-to-itiveness that you were talking about that, you know, they didn't necessarily give up and they believed that they could win the game, and they did.
And you could almost see the confidence growing as the game went along. They got out to a really good start, double-digit lead in the first half. And then after tying it at halftime, they come out and they get a couple of threes early from Bell and from Starling, and Carolina misses its first 10 shots of the second half. But even as things were getting closer, you could see Judah Mintz makes a play and, you know, just nodding his head coming down the court. JJ hits a three and he's looking at Judah and they're both like, yes, like this is happening. Quadir Copeland making a lot of good defensive plays down the stretch one-on-one. And you could just see the confidence growing in the final few minutes there to where they didn't look intimidated. They didn't look puzzled. They didn't look confused. Everything was kind of falling into place where the effort was matching the execution and then the results followed. So that was really cool to see. But clearly, I think, you know, Judah Mintz, J.J. Starling pulling, dragging this team to a victory on Tuesday night. They combined for 48, including 29 in the second half, and do it quite efficiently. We saw Judah get to the line 11 times, only took one three-point attempt, was attacking the rim and getting buckets on the other end. And JJ, every time it seemed like Syracuse needed a bucket, Starling was there for a pull-up jumper or a three or something just very important to kind of definitively put the momentum back in Syracuse's hands.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to point out, Matt, is that, you know, Adrian Autry has really tightened his rotation. I mean, Kyle Cuff now hasn't played in three games, and he's trusting his starting backcourt who, you know, each of them played all 40 minutes each. So he's trusting his guys, and he's getting results because, you know, he's pulling a Jim Boeheim, and he's tightening that rotation. But he's getting results because his guys are performing. And, you know, you mentioned the combined points, 48 from the two of them. And I think, you know, again, if you had asked me in the beginning of the season, is J.J. Starling going to be a good three-point shooter? I think we would have obviously agreed that the answer would have been no, but he shoots 3-for-6 from downtown. You know, Judah Mintz doesn't do that, and I think that's a good move on his part. And his job is to get to the line, and he does, and 9-for-11 from the free throw line. So, you know, a lot of positives there from Syracuse's two best players in their backcourt. And, you know, again, they played, I don't think they forced anything, which was really nice to see. And again, when JJ is shooting well, he plays with such confidence. And that three-point shot, you know, he said it in the postgame. He's kept working on it. He's kept drilling on it. And those results have really shown.
I think what we're seeing from him and Chris Bell, and I don't want to discount Chris Bell, who was in a more supplementary role on Tuesday, but has certainly shined as well. I think what we're seeing is reliability from beyond the arc with those two guys. And that has gone a long way in trying to get some more consistency and to get a big win like they did on Tuesday. That outside shooting presence from both of those guys has been a big help for Adrian Autry. On the other side of the break, Wesley, we're going to talk to somebody who was actually in the dome for Tuesday's victory. We'll get the inside perspective there when we come back on the Juice on the Cuse podcast.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Juice of the Cuse podcast. Matt D'Agostino, Wes Chang, and Jim Steck-Schulte. We've got a guy who was in the dome for Tuesday's win over North Carolina. Jim, take us through what things were like, the energy kind of as the night progressed and the crowd could sense maybe this was going to be a real thing, an upset win over North Carolina. And then once things finally ended and the student body ended up in the middle of the floor of the JMA Dome, take us through the energy of the night as you saw there and sat there.
I mean, the one thing that's always impressed me about Syracuse crowds is that if the team is winning, they are all in. And I say that going back to the first football game I attended after I graduated. It was firmly, and I mean firmly, in the Greg Robinson era. They got off to a hot start. They were up 14-0. And the dome, you know, even not being full, was rocking. And then there was one decision on a fourth down that was disagreed with, and you could actually feel the air go out of the dome back before the remodeling. But early on, the crowd was in it. They got up to that hot shooting start, and when Malik Brown hit that second three to make it an 8-2 game, and it was not even 2 minutes off the clock, like, the crowd response was a lot more than I expected for a three-pointer, even, you know, a rare one from a non-three-point shooter. But, like, it was they announced early, we're in this if you guys are, and we'll do what we can to help you out. So as the game progressed, the longer the team stayed in it, they went up by 10, and that lead kept touching 10 in the first half, and the crowd just kept kind of pushing and pushing. And then as things got a little worse, when, you know, halftime was, it was tied, but then they jumped out to that, was it 8 or 9 point lead early in the second half, and the crowd was right back in it. And they're like, we're staying because you guys are staying. We're staying. And so even when, you know, North Carolina got in front by 1 point, the dramatic fashion in which Syracuse got in front for good on the Starling three from your local suburb of choice that he backed in, the crowd was right back in it. And they never wavered after that. And I don't know if it helped to buoy the team or what, but they were in it to stay because the team was playing well. And so they responded in kind.
Again, joined by Jim Steckschulte here, associate editor for the Juice Online on the Rivals Network. And Jim, you know, I wanted to ask this question because, you know, Matt and I have covered a lot of games, as have you. And I have never personally covered a court storming game. I don't think Matt has either. So I just wanted to see, you know, kind of as a member of the media, you're sitting in press row, the students are starting to gather, and then they rush the court. What is that like for you as a member of the media, knowing that you have to get your job done? You know, you got to go to the interview room. You have to talk to the players. Did that just delay things? Did you have to navigate through the crowd? How did that work?
It just delayed things more than anything else. In the post-COVID era at the Dome, they've moved the primary media section. It used to be the tables that ran across the end of the court, like between the courtside seats and the pep band and the pep band student section. They've been moved. They actually have a riser that's built in front of the permanent bleachers. That is, if you're looking at the floor, it's to the right of the where the pep band sits. So it's actually a little farther away, a little more elevated. So actually, in some ways, it's actually a better view. I was in the secondary or overflow area that's in the corner of the turf that's beyond the visitors' bench for the basketball games. So, you know, as far as like, no media member who was in our capacity was a threat of anything happening, because you just, you know, like a regular game, you sit and wait it out for a few minutes, and then like you're basically waiting a few minutes for like people to leave and then clear a path. It's easy. But then in this case, with the least suspenseful court storming I've ever seen, because when the lead wasn't fading in the last minute, like there was a timeout with like 48 seconds to go. And that's when everyone started lining up to rush the court. So it was either they were either going to storm the court, or it was going to be a very, very disappointed and perhaps angry crowd. So, and after that, it was a wait. I mean, it was a longer wait than normal in the media room afterwards. Coach Autry had some ESPN details to attend to, and then met with the team. Hubert Davis came through and did his press conference in the media room before Autry ever arrived. So it was actually very leisurely from the media side of things. Certainly the less stressful than when I was involved in a court storming. I think it was the 94-95 season when Syracuse beat, I think, I think it was Kentucky. They were top five in the country. I don't remember all the details because I'm old, because I said stormed the court in 1995.
It was a diplomatic answer. I was expecting, you know, war stories of sharpening elbows and the whole nine yards, but good to see everyone was civil on Tuesday.
If you want to do a take, I'll just lie my face off. It's no problem.
Jim, do me a favor here. Wes knows this. I love to nerd out on stats. And I've been told you're the guy to go to for such things. The buzzword being metrics or advanced metrics. Mm-hmm. Take me through what you've got from Tuesday's win over North Carolina.
If you don't like a wet blanket and you just want to revel in the victory, this is the part where you hit the fast forward button on your podcast app of choice. They were great on offense throughout. It's not even funny how much better they were against Carolina than they were against any team. Bart Torvik's site, T-Rank, think of it as Ken Palm without a subscription. They allow a little more access. They did their adjusted offensive efficiency for the Orange in the game was their best this season. They did not do it. They don't do an adjustments for the Chaminade game because it's a Division II opponent. But Syracuse's opponent adjusted offensive efficiency was 146.4.
Wow.
The second best that they have for an individual game besides that was 124.5 for the Orange. And that was against Canisius earlier in the season. So it is... They were very, very good on offense. And if you look at the shot chart from the game, you'll see it, because the difference between the two halves of the shot chart is Syracuse made almost everything inside the paint, but all these shots that are like outside the restricted area and inside or just outside the paint, and Carolina did not. That was the big difference between the two. And frankly, because the defensive numbers for the Orange were a lot like they looked in the losing streak before, or the, you know, the rough games they've had where the defense has been poor in the run-up to that. The big difference, like the defensive efficiency between that game and the game where they got lost, where they lost in Carolina by 36 points, were very, very similar. Like before the opponent adjustment, the 36 point loss was defensive efficiency for the Orange was 122.8, and Tuesday night was 122.4.
Wow.
So before factoring in the opponent, the Syracuse defense was equally as porous in both games, and one was this dramatic court-storming win, and the other one was a game that they'd really like to just blot out from the schedule. So, you know, they were great on offense. The defense, still shaky. It just happened to come together on one magical Tuesday night, I guess, is probably the best way to describe it.
That's a great way to sum it up. A magical Tuesday night in what could otherwise be a subpar or underwhelming season given the Syracuse basketball standards. Jim Steck-Schulte of Rivals, thank you for joining us, sir. We appreciate the time, and maybe you save your online ticket stub, your virtual ticket stub or press credential for that one, and look back many years from now and say, you know what, I remember that one. I was in attendance for it. Jim, thanks for the time. We appreciate it, and we'll come back here on the Juice and the Cues podcast in a minute to wrap things up.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
One last segment here on the Juice on the Cues podcast on the Believe Network and on Rivals. Matt and Wes with you once again. And there's no other way to put it, Wes. It's the first signature win, as we mentioned, in the Adrian Autry era. So time will tell kind of where this goes, but we'll always look back positively or negatively on this game as, you know, the one that kind of catapults them into another territory, getting back to tournament relevance and everything else. Or even if it doesn't go that way, we can kind of look back at this one and say, hey, like, we did have this great moment in that first year. It may not have been what everyone was expecting, but to get a top 10 win for the first time since 2019 shows you it's been quite some time since Syracuse has had a win of this magnitude. So I don't think we should discount it regardless of whatever the final outcome is this season. And it still looks like Syracuse is off the radar for NCAA tournament competition here as we look through midway through February now. But we've talked about getting 5 wins to kind of get to 20. Maybe this is a stepping stone, if they can continue it, to get to 21, maybe, or make things a little bit tougher, or even if it helps them in the ACC tournament to be saying, you know what, we've beaten Carolina, we can beat this team X that is you know, seated higher than us in the ACC tournament, to give them that confidence moving forward, I think is something to build off of, and something tangible that they can look back on and see, hey, we've done this before and maybe we can do it again. So I don't know where this goes from here, but I think it is significant to kind of bookmark this game for sure in the Syracuse season.
So Matt, speaking of things that we've done before, you know, we've talked
easy
about
easy now. That. Some of this stuff we probably can't say here. I don't know. I made it sound like we're deviant folks. I don't know. We probably are toeing the line pretty well.
A little deviancy if you're rushing the court, right? Because we've been talking a lot about that. And, you know, Matt, it reminded me of a time 21 years ago, almost to the date. So I'm going to turn the way back machine to February 2nd, 2003, when Syracuse defeated then number two Pitt. You and I were both there. And Matt, if you remember, we were talking about this a little pre-show. We rushed the court 3 separate times in that game. So I had to look this up a little bit, but to put it in context, we thought Syracuse had won that, you know, that game by 2, but referees actually put 0.8 seconds back on the clock. And then, so we rushed the court the first time, then Brandon Knight heaves a half court shot, which to all of us appeared to be after the shot. So we rushed the court a second time, but then they wave us back off and Jim Boeheim has to get on the mic and he says, hey, everyone, get back to your seats. The game's not over yet. They finally do an official review. Speaking of things that, you know, kind of take the air out of the sail, you know, all, with all these stoppages. But even back then, there were stoppages. So finally, after an official's review, it was waved off. We rushed the court for a third time. Matt, I don't know if we're ever going to see that again in our lifetimes, but certainly a great memory during our sophomore year at the Hill. And, you know, there's been a lot of whatever social media that talks about, hey, you know, act like you've been there, you know, why are we storming the court? Well, you know, I think for it's part of the student experience. And if the students want to rush the court and they think it's a big enough time when it's only the students that are storming the court at that point. So, you know, to me, it was such a great experience. You know, 21 years later, we're still talking about that storming the court. So if I'm a student, I'm doing it, I'm enjoying the experience, and I'm going to remember something like that forever. So go rush the court, go make those memories. To me, I had zero problem with that.
Listen, do not say we when you talk about rushing the court 3 times. I did not. I was very poised in my seat, knowing that the first time that it was rushed was not accurate. Like, there was still time to go. Listen, I was looking as everyone is a sea of orange is moving past me. I stayed true. I stayed locked in my seat, or standing at my seat at that point. But I want to make sure the record states that I did not preemptively rush the court like so many others did. So I'm very proud of that moment. Was that the Jeremy McNeil 2 free throws game?
Yes, it's that. That's the one, yeah.
The one and only time, I think, that Jeremy McNeil hit 2 free throws in a row, especially in a clutch situation like that. And the third thing I'll say, Wes, is there was one thing that was very present and noticeable in the court rush on Tuesday that was not there 21 years ago when we set our feet on the Carrier Dome floor. The presence of cell phones.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Everyone
had their cell phones raised.
Going live, yeah, with whatever app they're using, whatever social media they're going on. That was never a part of our storming.
No, it was not.
21 years ago. So that was definitely noticeable.
Get off my lawn, you damn whippersnappers.
I know. It's almost like what do they say? Be present, be in the moment. I don't know how you're doing that as you're filming things. I probably would be the old man who would not even do that, just so I have that memory more for myself. Like, that's my memory. I want to share that with the rest of the world. I don't want social media to do it for me. So, but that was funny, where literally everybody's holding up a phone on Tuesday night on the floor. But fun to see. Good moment for the Syracuse basketball team. Certainly a tentpole event for them, beating North Carolina at home when Carolina's ranked number 7. We'll see in the coming weeks, whether this is a stepping stone to something better or merely, you know, just a marquee matchup in the middle of an otherwise subpar season. So hopefully it leads to some bigger and better things, if not this season, certainly in the future as Adrian Autry continues his tenure as the Syracuse basketball coach. Wes, fine job once again. Jim Steck-Schulte, we would appreciate your time as well. And we'll catch you next time right here on the Juice on the Cuse podcast.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.